Stark here, joined here today with our Robert Lindsay. Hey, Robert Lindsay.
Hi, how are you?
So, we're going to be discussing your articles you've written about the situation in Russia, and if we have time, we can cover some other topics as well, but I will start off with this post that you wrote called Why I Stand with Putin. And you respond to a commentator named Tulio. Can you explain, Robert, what Tulio was saying about... he was saying that you were too pro-Russia in your attitude.
That's because I was progressive, right?
Yeah, you're progressive.
He said,
yeah.
I can't believe a progressive is supporting Putin, right?
Is he... So he was trying to say Putin's a right wing?
That's what he said, right? Is that
okay,
what he said?
Okay. I will read you exactly what Tulio wrote. Tulio says, okay, Robert, your words are written in stone. We'll come back a year from now and see if Russia is better off. We don't need Russia for anything, really. My life goes on as normal. I really don't get Robert's pro-Russia attitude. Robert says he's a leftist. But that country is a nightmare for anyone with progressive values. It has the worst income inequality in the world, for starters.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And so you says your response was yes, and who created that situation? The U.S. And the West did.
Yes, that's right. That's right. The fact that Russia has the worst income equality, supposedly, in the world, which I'm not really sure if that's true, that was created by the United States and the West. And actually, their income inequality was even worse in the 1990s when Russia was the greatest country in the world, according to the U.S. and the West. So,
under Yeltsin.
I mean, why is the United States worried about Russia's income inequality? I mean, this is a country that celebrates inequality. Our entire ruling class and both parties, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, they're all about income inequality. You know, they actually celebrate it. That's the main American value is a celebration of inequality.
So are you saying has income inequality in Russia reduced since Putin came to power as opposed to the Yeltsin regime?
I think so. You see, the U.S. wants to go back to the Yeltsin regime when Russia was a colony of the United States and the West. It was a colony of the United States, international Jewry and Israel and the West. The colony of the bankers in New York and Tel Aviv. And they went in there and looted that whole country and they stole everything that wasn't tied down and they raped and ruined the country. You know, they destroyed it.
Well, what did you say?
A lot of them were Jews too. It was done as part of a plot of international Jewry. Kind of, they're all working together. The Rothschilds of London were in on it, and one third of the Russian oligarchs were Jews, and a lot of them had bases in Tel Aviv and Israel also. And they were also working with the neocons in the United States, especially Richard Perle. And it was kind of an international network. I'm not really sure what's going on. I think the Jews, the Jews were mad at Russia because remember how the Jews got all mad at Russia after Zionism? They're saying Russia wouldn't let the Jews leave and all that stuff. And Yeah, and, you know, I think the Jews are just mad at Russia. You know, I think they're trying to get revenge on Russia for supposedly
yeah.
years of anti-Semitism.
I mean, the ironic
stuff,
part is they hate Russia so much that they're aligning themselves with outright neo-Nazis.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that all international Jewry is taking a coherent stance on Ukraine. I'm hearing this a lot online, and they're calling it the Anglo-Zionists and UZA, the United Zionists.
Are you talking about the alternative right or the radical left?
I don't really know what they are. They're just kind of people who are pro-Putin. A lot of them are kind of anti-Jewish and anti-Israel and all this stuff. And they claim the West is controlled by Jews or Zionists or whatever. But really, really, the Jews do not have a coherent stance on Ukraine. Basically, the Jewish stance on Ukraine is the stance of whatever country they live in. So the Jews of the West are anti-Russia and pro-UP. The Jews, the Russian Jews hate the Yukis. The Russian Jews are 100% behind Putin.
Yeah, they do. That's,
and Putin is...
They support, for the most part, they support Putin. That's absolutely true.
Yeah, and they hate those Yukis because they think they're Nazis. They really do think they're Nazis. And they're like, screw those guys, you know. And
yeah,
Russia has...
When there was a genocide there about 100 years ago, that was actually more in the Ukraine than in Russia proper.
Which genocide was that?
There was an anti-Jewish genocide in the Ukraine. It wasn't that about 100 years ago?
Oh, a pogrom or something like that?
Yeah.
Well, those things happen all the time, you know. I mean, it just, that was just constant. I was under the czars, you know. But anyway, and also the Yukis, the Russian Jews know that when the Nazis came in, the Yuki government is based on the Western Yukis. Western Ukraine, everything from the Kiev West. And they call it Galicia, they call it Banderistan. That's where the Ukrainian nationalists come from. The whole Ukrainian nationalist movement is based in the Western Ukraine. And really, that hasn't even been a part of the country called Ukraine for very long. The country called the Ukraine is basically a fiction. It doesn't even exist.
So you're saying historically it's just a faction of Russia?
Not just Russia, but also Poland and the West. Everything from Kiev West was never really a part of Russia. That was always a part of the West. And that is, you can go, I do believe that there are such things as stateless nations. For instance, there's never really been a Kurdistan, but I think the Kurds deserve a country anyway. You know, some nations have just never been given countries. And there is a Ukrainian nation. I would agree with that.
Every group should have a country.
Well, not necessarily every group, but I do favor the right to self-determination, of course. You know, that's a general left-wing principle, and it's also enshrined in the United Nations. And it's something that all progressive people should get behind, really, is the right to self-determination. And personally, I think the alt-right ought to get behind it, too. You know, it's just a basic human rights principle, you know. The right to self-determination of nations, the liberation of nations, you know. The nations want to be free. Well, you see, there is a Ukrainian nation, and it's basically everything from Kiev to the west, to the western border there. And that's your Banderistan or Galicia or whatever you want to call it. And this is really the homeland of the Ukrainians. But traditionally, it hasn't even been a part of Russia, and it hasn't even been an independent state either. It's always been a part of Poland or the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth or the Austro-Hungarian Empire or Germany or something like that. And they have a legitimate claim for a state from everything from Kiev to the west. Now, everything from Kiev to the east is completely different. That's traditionally been a part of Russia. It was called Nova Russia and Mala Russia.
So at what point What point in history did that area become the Ukraine instead of Russia?
Oh, with the Bolsheviks in 1917 or what? Well, it was an independent country from 1919 to 1921.
Called Nova Russia.
And a lot of them fought. No, Ukraine, period, I guess. I don't really know. I don't really know what the borders were, but there was an independent Ukraine for a while there, and there was a guy named Makho, M-A-K-H-O, he's some kind of anarchist, and he was anti-Bolshevik, and they were fighting against the Bolsheviks during that Russian Civil War there. They had an independent country for a couple of years. The Reds won in the Russian Civil War, and then Lenin gave them a state, and he really enlarged their boundaries, and he gave them a lot of what has always been part of Russia. He gave them a lot of Mala Russia, and especially gave them a lot of Nova Russia, because Nova Russia has always been a part of Russia. He just stuck those onto when Lenin made that Ukrainian SSR, he just stuck all kinds of pieces of places into that under that Republic, and it doesn't really have any coherency at all. It's just kind of glued together, you know, and those borders just don't really mean anything. The borders of the Ukrainian SSR don't really mean anything. They're just kind of senseless.
So you disagree? Do you disagree with people who try to say that Putin is an imperialist?
Oh, of course he isn't. Of course, you know, Putin just, they say Putin wants to conquer the Ukraine. He wants to conquer Nova Russia. Did you know Putin, yesterday, he fired 18 generals. Those generals wanted Putin to invade the Ukraine right now. They're taking a hardline stance on the, they wanted to invade Nova Russia right now. And those are like hardliners, and Putin fired them. Putin does not want to go into Ukraine. He does not want to go into Nova Russia. He does not want to invade. He doesn't want to do it. He'll do it if we push him to his limits, but he doesn't want to do it. So it's a lie. It's a lie that Putin wants to conquer the Ukraine, that he wants to conquer Nova Russia. Russia doesn't want to annex that region. The Nova Russians want to be part of Russia, and Russia says, sorry, we don't want to annex you.
So the key issue that you're pointing out is that you're saying Putin is standing up against U.S. and Western imperialism, and
He's
arming Syria and Iran, who are standing up against U.S. imperialism. And he's also allied
with
Venezuela and Cuba.
Well, you see, Putin wants a multipolar world. He doesn't want a unipolar world. Right now we have a unipolar world, and we have U.S. world dictatorship. And that's what the U.S. wants, and we've had it for some time now. This was a dream of the neocons under George Bush, and especially, I think it started really in 1990 with the fall of the USSR, and then the Project for the New American Century came in, and these are the people who are writing the documents for the Project for the New American Century. You've heard of that?
Yeah, isn't that primarily about the Middle East?
Yeah, but it's also about U.S. imperialism and creating a U.S. world dictatorship. And Paul Wolfowitz and Feith and Richard Perle and all those guys and all those old Cold Warriors, they're all in on that. And Dick Cheney was too. And so is George Bush. He bought into it. This basically the neocon. The neocon line is just U.S. imperialism and U.S. uber alles and U.S. world dictatorship.
And
U.S. Control over the world. U.S. is the hegemon.
Would you say the United
capital
States...
Capital H, hegemon. That's
so
the United
you would
States.
Say the United States is the most... the biggest threat to world peace out of every country?
Yes, I think so. A lot of people say Israel, too, but I think the United States is, really.
What would the runner-ups be?
Pardon me?
What would the runner-ups be after the United States? What would be like second and third?
When they do questionnaires, it always ends up U.S. is the major threat to world peace, and then I think Israel is second.
So you said that the world left is standing with Putin. By left, you don't mean the Democratic Party and Obama and George Soros.
No. That's the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party has two wings or three wings, really. And one of the wings is called the left wing of the Democratic Party. And if you've ever been to Daily Cause, heard of Daily Cause?
Yeah.
Okay, Daily Cause is a site for the left wing of the Democratic Party. And the left wing of the Democratic Party.
Do they ban you?
No, they don't ban me. But that guy who runs it, Marcos, he's in deep with the Democrats. And the left wing of the Democratic Party is the base of the party. And those people are liberals. That's basically what the base of the Democratic Party are liberals. Just as the base of the Republican Party are basically, you know, like Tea Partiers and, you know, really hardline conservatives and stuff like that. You know, and the Republican base is racist, you know, really. But the party itself really isn't, you know. It's just the bases tend to be a little more radical than the parties itself. The Democratic base is a little more left-wing than the party itself. and Republican base is.
Well, but people have called
more.
Have called you a racist as well.
Yeah, that's just not true at all. Cause
or people people have called me that plenty of times.
You know, I'm a progressive person, and you know, I really to call us a racist. Anti-racism is a progressive value, and that's one of the things we've always been against is racism. And to call us a racist is a real insult, and really hurt the feelings. And
does it hurt your
most
feelings,
of us,
or do you brush it off?
It does hurt my feelings. I admit it. Now I just gave my enemies a bunch more ammo because now that they heard that, they're going to call me it 20 more times just to raise my temperature, you know. But I don't like being called a racist. And when people call me that, I go and look at what I said. They call me racist, and I try to figure out why they call me racist. And sometimes I'll change my views. And every article I write, I'm writing it very carefully, and I'm trying not to sound racist. You know, because that's just not one of our values. You know, that's just one thing. It's just not allowed on the left. You just can't be openly racist like that. I mean, if I go to a left-wing movement or meeting or rally or website and I start saying openly racist things, they're just going to be like, get lost. You know, racism on the left, just okay. You just can't do it. But,
so,
you know, the definition of racism has expanded so much that the word doesn't even make sense anymore, you know, the word is just crazy now. The anti-racists have just ruined the word, you know.
Total lunatics. So you're saying that back to the back
on topic. Crazy.
Yeah, well back to the topic. So you're saying that the world left is with Putin.
The hard left is with Putin. Yeah, like the Nation magazine. That's kind of like to the left of the base of the Democratic, to the left of Daily Kos, but not exactly the hard left, and their 50-50 split on Putin. Daily Kos is about 50-50 split on Putin. That's the base of liberal-based Democratic Party. But the hard left, like Counterpunch, is with Putin, and all of the communist parties of the world are with Putin. The only people on the hard left that are not with Putin are some Trotskyists. So they're crazy anyway. But some Trots are with Putin, some are with the U.S. Trots are nuts. So.
What are your thoughts on that national Bolshevik movement?
I'm a little bit worried about it because it sounds like fascism. And, you know, we don't like that. On the left, we don't like fascism. We're just not going to be okay with that. You know?
So national Bolshevik, they support Putin.
Yeah, they support Putin, right? Yeah, correct. And a lot of the fascist movements of Europe are backing Putin against the West, but you know that's just more of a case of the enemy of my enemy is my friend sort of thing. You know, I don't think it means Putin is a fascist. It's just see the fascist movements in Europe. They hate the U.S. They hate the U.S. They hate the West. They hate the EU. They hate all those liberal governments of the EU. You know, those liberal anti-white governments and all that stuff. And
but don't they have a point?
Against the West. And, you know, Putin...
Don't those groups have a valid...
Yeah, sure. And that's why they're lining up with Putin. You know, it's just Putin's against the West, so we're going to go with Putin. It's not that Putin's a fascist or anything. Like, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. You know,
if you go back in history, like the U.S. imperialists, they carved out that Muslim state in Kosovo.
Well, of course, and we supported separatism in Yugoslavia. We supported separatism when the USSR, in the USSR, you know, we supported separatism. We broke up that whole state of Yugoslavia, and we supported armed separatism in Kosovo, which is exactly the same thing as the North Russians are doing. The United States tries to break up its enemies. As far as its enemies go, the United States promotes separatism, and it says, right of self-determination. It's both armed separatism, and the U.S. goal is to break up all of its enemies, the armed separatists. But then, as far as its allies go, the United States opposes all separatist movements and invokes the principle of geographical integrity. So you see, U.S. is crap. The United States is full of crap. We're hypocrites. We're lying, and U.S. foreign policy is garbage. It has no moral clarity whatsoever. Anybody who believes in this is either a fool or or a sneaky, shady person.
What?
There's no moral integrity to these positions. They're completely hypocritical.
What is the role?
One thing for our allies, another thing for our enemies. Crap.
What is the role that Russia plays in the conflict in the Middle East?
You know, it's hard to say. You know, the armed Syria and Iran, so you'd think that the Israel would hate them, but Russia has very good relations with Israel. So I just think Russia, it's not that Russia likes the Syrians because they hate Israel or anything like that. It's just that U.S. sees to Russia, the U.S. and the West trying to destroy Syria, and Russia's like, screw that. You know, we're not going to allow this. You know, we're not gonna allow you Americans to just go around and mess things up all over the whole world.
And I saw a report. It said basically about Christians in the Middle East that Christians in the Middle East don't trust the United States, but they see Russia as their protector.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know. Was Russia helping these Christians and Yazidis in Kurdistan? You know, U.S. foreign policy is not coherent on that either, really. The U.S. would rather save one Jew than 100,000 Christians. In the Middle East, the life of one Jew is worth more to the United States than the life of 100,000 Christians. You think we're some kind of Christian country or something? No, we're not. We're a Jewish country. America's a Jewish country. No, really, we're a Jewish country. It's not that the Jews run America. It's just that America is simply a Jewish country. You know, American people are Jewish people. You know, I mean, we're
including Jews, including you and I.
I don't know. Everybody's a Jew, but we're basically a Judaized country, Judaized culture, and all that sort of thing. I wouldn't say everybody's a Jew, but the culture is basically we're Judaized Gentiles. You know, I mean, you don't have to. Anybody can be a Jew. You know, that's basically my position. Anybody can be a Jew, and. You know, I think 100 years ago, Karl Marx predicted that.
I know about that. Yeah.
I think Karl Marx predicted that the United States would be the first Jewish country in the world, and it's come true. Really, we're a Jewish country. You know? I think there's one country called. I don't think Israel controls the United States, or I don't think the U.S. controls Israel. I think there's one country. It's called U.S.-real. It's all one country. You know. It's not that they control these evil Jews. They control America. You know, or the left is like, oh, the evil imperialists, Americans, they control this helpless little Israel. It's just one country. You know, I mean, Israel's just like part of the United States or something. And that's why we go to war for them all the time and stuff. You know, they're just like.
That's interesting you point that out because, the view of the hard left is that American imperialists are actually exploiting Israel, but then on the other end, you know, David Duke says America is always been a great country, but it's just been exploited by Israel. That's what someone like that would say.
No, not really, because how can you be willingly exploited? I mean, the Americans want, if we're being exploited by Israel, the Americans want to be exploited. Americans love Jews, they love Israel, you know, it's not that they're exploiting us or anything. It's just that it's more that they're one of us. And American people are on board with it, and they don't like it. So, personally, I think that any country which is stupid enough to let a bunch of little Jews to live these silly little Jews.
America is simultaneously the most powerful country and the most idiotic and stupid country.
Yeah, really. I mean, look. The Jews are 2% of the United States. If the American people are so stupid as to let 2% of the country lead us around by the nose and control us and run us and everything, I have no respect for the American people. I have no respect for us at all, and we deserve it. We deserve every bad thing that's going to happen to us because no country should let some little pissant tribe of people take control over them. If anybody does that, loses my respect.
Absolutely.
And I actually have respect for the Jews for putting one over on us, you know, for putting one over on this bunch of idiots here, for the Jews.
Oh, so they're welcome on your blog. You're not a discriminatory
no,
blog. You welcome them.
Who, Jews?
Yeah.
Of course, I would love to have more Jews on my blog. You know, they just don't stick around all that long because
Do you scare them off, or some of the other posters do?
I guess some of the other posters do, but you know that website Debka?
Sounds familiar, yeah.
Yeah, they claim it's run by the Mossad or something. I don't know, these guys, they probably start working with me after I say that, but I actually work with those guys, so. I guess you could say I work with the Mossad.
Yeah.
I just give them information. I give them information and stuff, and,
on what?
The world scene, the world stories, and they're just a little group of guys there. They don't know everything about everything all the time, and they rely on intelligent sources. And intelligent sources is just like what they call raw intel. And what you see on Debka is more or less what they call raw intel. So what comes into the CIA office every day is something called raw intel, and actually it comes from people like me, just like. Experts in world affairs, they're just like giving the CIA information all the time. Okay.
Were you responsible for leaking out that? Did you say you were the first one to post that picture of that Israeli soldier? Your blog.
Yeah. I found it. I gave it to Debka, and I said, put this on your site right away. You'll be the first news site to put it up there, and they just put it up there right away.
Did they give you?
I actually kind of like Debka. I actually like Debka in a way, even though they're hardline Israeli radicals, but. In a way, I respect them. In a way, I respect them because, I don't know. It's a great site because Debka has some of the best information out there, really. I mean, it's tainted by their views and stuff, but I don't know. I don't think they lie all that much, really. And a lot of times they print stuff that's not helpful to Israel. They don't just print Israeli propaganda. They print a lot of stuff that makes Israel look pretty bad.
What was your opinion on the recent conflict in Gaza?
It's really hard to say, of course. I don't like all that bombing and stuff. You see, Hamas didn't even do that kidnapping, you see. That's the thing. That those teenage boys were kidnapped. And I don't know what the purpose of it was. Maybe they didn't try to trade them for prisoners or something like that. But one of the boys called the cops when they were captured. They said, "Hey man, we've been captured. We've been kidnapped." And then the kidnappers saw that he did that, and then they shot all three of them because they figured the gigs up. Hamas didn't do it. It was done by this family in Hebron called the Kawasne clan. I guess there was a mosque or something, but...
So this took place in the West Bank. This was not in Gaza.
Yeah, don't you know? Did you hear about those teenagers who got killed? That's what set this whole thing out. Yeah. Well, that was done in Hebron. That family operates out of Hebron. And they killed those boys. And it's the Kawasne clan. And they are outside of the control of the Hamas. It's a rogue group who just does whatever they want. And Hamas did not want this kidnapping. And especially did not want those boys to be killed. They did not want that. That's one thing they did. And the Hamas leadership did not know anything about this plot. It was done under their noses without them knowing about it. So why attack Hamas? See? Does it make sense?
What are your thoughts on people who say that they intentionally killed civilians in Gaza? Do you agree with that, or do you dispute that claim?
They intentionally killed some. Yeah, I think they intentionally killed some. I really think Israel tries to kill as few civilians as possible. Any other country that would have gone in there, the civilian death toll would have been way higher. I mean, could you imagine if the Iraqi government was bombing in there, or the Syrian government, or the Ukrainian government. I don't know. The United States tries to minimize. The United States would have killed a lot more civilians, I think. See, the Israelis actually are extremely sensitive to world opinion, and they really don't like being called baby killers and kid killers and all that sort of thing, and that's sort of it. So they really don't like it. So actually, they really do try to minimize civilian casualties, kill as many militants as possible, and they want to kill as few civilians as possible if they can. I mean, the ideal operation for the Israelis is to go in there and kill 1,000 militants and 0 civilians. I mean, to them, that's gold, you know. They don't want to kill civilians. I mean, sometimes they do, but sometimes the soldiers do it on purpose. Yeah.
Just saying individual soldiers sometimes do, but it's not official policy.
Yeah, and sometimes the commanders give them permission to also. So sometimes they kill civilians on purpose. Yeah.
Do you have any criticisms of the arguments, or you could say propaganda, by the pro-Palestinian movement? What are your criticisms of their arguments?
Well, it's a propaganda campaign, of course, and you know the Arabs run around holding up those babies and go, "Oh, Israelis are killing kids," and the whole thing is, every time you hold up on those babies and start screaming and yelling and calling them Jews baby killers and stuff, you know, it just sets up all these demonstrations all over the world. And a lot of Americans are getting upset about it. And that's a way to stop the Israelis from attacking you, is run around with those dead babies, holding them up in the air and taking pictures of them. You know?
So would you say your stance overall is neutral on the conflict?
Yeah, kind of. I'm not 100% pro-Palestinian. I don't like Hamas. I don't trust them. And I think Jews ought to be able to live in Israel. And I don't know if Hamas wants to live with Jews. I'm kind of worried about that. But on the other hand, I really don't like the Israeli government. I don't like what they're doing. I don't like the settlement project. I don't even like the whole Zionist project, really. But as long as they're there, they have a right to stay there. But it's just not right. And the problem is the Arabs are Muslims, and Muslims are just terrible. You know, Muslims are just not okay with living with minorities. You know, I mean, anytime you got a bunch of Muslims in a country, you just got a lot of problems. You know, and they're not okay with living with non-Muslims. They just start killing them. You know, so if the Palestinians were a bunch of Christians, I'd feel a lot better about them, I think.
What factor?
I don't want to see a bunch of Jews killed. I don't want to see a bunch of Jews killed. World's had enough Jew killing. And that last time was just, that was the last time, really, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't think the world's going to allow it either. You know, we killed the Jews one too many times, especially that last time.
Do you think Lars, you would say a large portion of the Muslims would celebrate the happening?
Celebrate what happening?
Jews being killed.
Well, they already do, don't they? look how these Muslims are acting in Iraq. Look how they're acting in Syria. I mean, that's how they act, man.
What factions of Islam would you say are the absolute worst?
Well, the worst are the Sunnis, really, I think. I think the Shia are a lot more tolerant. Especially the hardline Sunnis. And the Sunnis just do not live well with any kind of minority.
What is weird is, do you know the neocons? The neocons are more hostile towards the Shias, who are actually more moderate, and they're more, the neocons actually tolerate like Saudi Arabia, but Saudi Arabia is where most of the financing for radical Islam is from, but the neocons are more hostile towards the Shias.
Really, the most Jew-hostile groups are the Sunnis. And the more Jew-friendly groups are the Shia, and the more moderate groups. You know, they hate the Shia because the Shia are the true enemies of Israel anymore. You know, the only countries and movements that are really anti-Israel these days are Shia movements. The Sunnis have completely dropped the ball on supporting Israel. They've blown it completely. Supporting the Palestinians. The Sunnis are not attacking Israel at all anymore. The Palestinians have no Sunni allies. All the allies of the Palestinians are Shia. The allies of the Palestinians are Hezbollah, Syria, and Iran. And that's it. And they have no Sunni allies. None.
And why do you
think the Sunni Arab world has failed them?
But why do you think that is? Because the Shias overall are more moderate.
I don't really know. I mean, it's just Syria really hates Israel. Syria really hates Israel. They're real Israel haters because Israel is occupying their land. And it's all about the Golan.
But it's not.
All about the Golan.
Syria is probably, I mean, I mean, obviously the rebels are coming in and they're killing Christians, but traditionally Syria has been the most tolerant of Christians in the whole Middle East.
Or Lebanon.
I mean, I'm not sure about the relationship between Hezbollah and Christians during the Civil War, but today, I mean, Hezbollah is not necessarily super anti-Christian.
They weren't even anti-Christian during the Civil War. There were a lot of Christians fighting right alongside Hezbollah.
So what were the major factions in that war?
I don't really know, but I don't know. Some is Maronites. The Maronite Christians were one, and the Maronite Christians were fighting against the Palestinians, and then eventually the Shiite got involved, the Hezbollah got involved, and also the Druze were involved. And I really don't understand that war very well, but it was set off by Maronite anger against the Palestinians. And then later it turned in, and the Shia just sat there and took it for a while, of course, just like they always do. When Israel first went into Lebanon, they were greeted with cheering crowds in those Shia villages. The Shia villages cheered them. And the Israelis blew it, you know, just like they always do. They started killing the Shia. And the Shia sat there and took it for a couple of years, and then they started rising up against them, you know.
Because I know it was... So were the it was primarily Christians versus Sunnis in Lebanon?
No. Well, yeah, I get Palestinians. Yeah. Palestinians, and then I guess... I don't even know. I don't even know. I couldn't even tell you. It was Palestinians against Maronites, at the very least, something like that. And then the Shia got involved, and you'd have to go ask somebody else. I really don't. I don't even know about that war. It doesn't really make sense. I know the Palestinians supposedly massacred a Christian village, but this was a Maronite village, and they were the enemy. They were fighting each other, you know. So, and the Maronites were pro-Israel. The Maronites were working out alongside Israel during that war. And then the Maronites were in charge of occupying. The Maronite army was in charge of occupying that. Remember, Israel sort of conquered part of southern Lebanon there, and they said it was like part
of
the Israel.
Maronites, they were allies with the French when the French came in.
Yeah, that's just kind of like the Western Yupis, you know. They look to the west. You got a difference over there between Christian people. Some of them look to the west, and some of them look to the east. The Maronites have always looked west. And they don't like Arabs.
Some it's interesting about that, about Lebanese Christians. Some of them identify as Arabs, but you have some of them. Well, they say they're descended from the ancient Phoenicians, and they strongly reject an Arab identity.
Yeah, that's Lebanese nationalism. Lebanese nationalism comes from the Maronite Christians, and it's basically a fascist movement. And a lot of the Maronites were fascists.
But what's wrong? What is inherently wrong with fascism?
Well, I like it. I'm a leftist. I mean, no pots are wrong. You know, we're not gonna make peace with those people ever. You know, we don't like them.
What is your opinion of the Arab the Ba'athist like movement?
Well, yeah, they were. Yeah, I was sort of a fascist movement too, you know. I mean, all nationalist movements are sort of fascist, but they were kind of like anti-imperialist fascists, and they were nationalists. And I respect them.
So here's a question for you, for people like you and people on the left. Would you be willing to ally yourself with self-described fascists if they are fighting against American imperialism?
Yeah, I would. As a matter of fact, after the U.S. invaded Iraq, I supported Saddam Hussein. You know, I supported Saddam, who's just kind of a fascist, and he's a horrible person and all. But he's defending the homeland, and I got to respect that, you know. I really got to respect that. I remember there was one incident during the battle for the airport. This guy was out there, and he said, I was fighting at the battle, and all of a sudden I turned around, and there was Saddam. He's standing right there. And his bodyguards were all around him, and Saddam said... He said, hey, look. He said, I don't care if you support me. I don't care if you like me or hate me. I don't care if you support my government or oppose my government. He said, now's the time to fight for Iraq. He said, don't fight for me. Fight for Iraq. And Saddam gave him his gun. He actually said Saddam ran forward a few yards and started shooting his gun.
At the
invaders. And then Saddam came back to the guy and he said, here, he said, take my gun. He said, go fight for Iraq. He said, don't fight for me. And the guy was like, wow, man. Saddam, he said, I never really liked Saddam before that. He said, man, that's so cool, you know. Saddam was a nationalist.
So back to some of the issues about Russia. So one of the arguments, you have an article, Some Ridiculous Anti-Russian Arguments. There's a question is, people say that Russia has allies. Russia has no allies in the former East Bloc or the former Soviet Union. But you dispute that.
Right.
That's a total lie.
Right. Well, they have allies in Belarus, in Kazakhstan, and in Armenia. And I think Bulgaria is with Russia, and Serbia, Montenegro, and Macedonia, and Greece are probably all with Russia.
And before we wrap up the topic on Russia, is there anything else you'd like to add about one thing I'll ask you about Russia is the economic, what are your thoughts on Putin's economic policies? So you're saying he's not a neoliberal. You actually like some of his economic policies.
He's not a neoliberal. And yeah, Russia has bad economic discrepancy and all, but you know, Putin really, he's not a fascist. What is Putin? He's kind of a communist, really. He's KGB. He's kind of an old commie, you know. He thinks he's still working for the president of the Soviet Union or something. And if he's like anyone, he's like Stalin, I think.
You're saying the same thing like that the Tea Party types say. The Tea Party types are like, Putin's a commie.
Well, he's more of a commie than a fascist.
But I think what he is, I think he's a pragmatist.
He's a nationalist. I'll tell you what he is. He's a nationalist. He's a patriot. But he's not even really like a.
What's interesting, you bringing that up. I interviewed a Russian nationalist. He's a Russian ethno-nationalist. His name was Igor Artemyev, and he absolutely despises Putin. He says Putin is an enemy of Russian nationalism. Have you heard that?
Well, you see, there's two major trends in Russian politics. One is Russian nationalism, just like that guy. And those are real hardliners. Those guys are real hardliners. And they're really crazy.
So you've heard of have you heard of Igor Artemyev?
No, not at all. And then there's other people that are called Atlantic integrationists. And those are the people who run Medvedev. And a lot of the oligarchs are with those guys. Putin's not with the oligarchs necessarily. And Putin is in between those two groups. And the Atlantic integrationists want peace with the West, and they want to suck up to the West. And I don't really know. They're just total sellouts, you know. They just want to sell out all of Russia and all the Slavic world and just totally line up with New York and D.C. and Berlin and all that, you know, in London. And they just want to become slaves again. I don't really know. They're just nation sellers, really. And Putin is in between the nation sellers and the nationalists, really. And,
how would you describe his economic policy?
I'm not really sure, but is it neoliberalism? I mean, the state spends a lot of money on the economy. A lot of the economy is state-owned. Or the state has a big slice in it. The state has like 60%
and did
slice.
The Ukraine, United States, basically put in a puppet who instilled a very much an oligarchic form of government that favored the ultra-rich?
Well, Ukraine, since its independence, has always been run by oligarchs. Always. And the last time, this supposedly evil guy that got overthrown was a pro-Russian oligarch. and they threw him out, and they put in a pro-Western Nazi oligarch. So, you know,
you would describe that movement in the Ukraine, would you describe them as fascists?
Yeah, not only that, they're Nazis, in my opinion. They are Nazis. Those are real Nazis. But it's kind of complicated. They're kind of like Jew-loving Nazis, sort of. Really, what they are is Russia-phobic fascists. That's what they are.
Russia-hating fascists. The thing about that is they don't necessarily like Jews, but they hate Russia far worse.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of Jews in the government. You know, the last prime minister was Jew. And supposedly 37% of the oligarchs in Ukraine are Jews. And one of the worst real Nazis in all of Ukraine is a Jew. And he's out of this place called Dnipro-Provoke or something. And he's got a militia there. And he says kill all the Moscows, you know, kill all the Moscalis. You know, kill all the people in Nova Russia. Kill all the Nova Russians. Kill them all. You know, kill 6 million people. And he's got this really crazy militia that are they're fascist militia, basically.
So you think they're the ones who shot down that plane, the Malaysian airliner?
Oh, I know. Oh, I know they did. I know. And all the evidence points to them, and zero evidence points to the separatists. Zero. There's no evidence points to the separatists. As soon as it happened, the U.S. starts saying, we think the separatists did it. It looks like the separatists did it. Separatists did it. Separatists did it. And then they've just been chiming on with that ever since, and they never even considered the possibility that the Yankees did it. The whole argument doesn't make sense. The separatists don't even have any books. They have 4 books, and they don't work. The Yukis have 35 working books. Why all the focus on the separatists having maybe 1 book or something? The Yukis have 35 books, and they all work. And they had 5 book batteries right in the vicinity of where that plane was shot down. And they moved one of the batteries right to the edge of separatist territory the day the plane was shot down, and they moved it back the next day. And the Russians have video of the Yukis launching a book right at the same time the airline went down. And you can go watch the video. They launched it from Yuki territory too.
Before I move on to a different topic, is there anything else you'd like to add on the situation in Ukraine and Russia?
Not really. It's just, I'd like to say propaganda sure does work, doesn't it?
Yeah, it totally does, because people, especially Americans, but even people in other parts of the world are stupid, and they accept propaganda. They don't think critically.
Well, the Jews are right. The Jews are right. Jews are smart. The Jews are like, once we come into a country, we're going to grab this damn media. Now, they're not doing that just to be evil. The Jews mostly do that to, okay, we're going to kick this media out of the hands of the anti-Semites. It is paranoid. You know, the media is going to get in the hands of the anti-Semites. They're going to kill all the Jews. The Jews try to grab the media and try to make it philo-Semitic, you know, and keep the anti-Semites out of the media.
You know that? Do you know that
and,
guy?
And that's all they really want to do.
Do you know that guy, Gerald Bazarab?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You don't consider him. You don't really consider him to be anti-Semitic. But he said he wants to create a state-owned media that bans any like pro-Israel arguments.
Yeah, well, being anti-Israel is not the same thing as being anti-Jew. You know.
You don't consider Gerald to be anti-Semitic?
I think he's part Jewish, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. No, he's not anti-Semitic. No, of course not.
So,
anti-Israel doesn't equal anti-Semite, though. Not necessarily. I mean, there's a lot of overlap, but it's not 100%.
Yeah, but there is overlap.
The left anti-Israel people are not anti-Semites. Believe me.
Here's the thing.
If I go...
I interviewed Bay Area guy, and he made a valid point. The view that the far left takes towards Israel, and they basically just view Israel as a white country oppressing brown people. So they're not... That's how the left sees it.
Something like that, right? You know, I mean, brown people can do no wrong, right? And white people are just always evil, you know? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, let me tell you something. You know, all these stupid... One thing... I do hate Jews in a way. I hate certain things about them. I hate it when Jews scream anti-Semitism all the time. I hate super Jews and Jewish nationalism that scream anti-Semitism all the time and are paranoid and thinks everybody hates them. And I hate it when they talk like that. And if I knew a Jewish person who was going around screaming anti-Semite all the time, I would tell them to get lost and say, I don't want to be your friend. And if I owned a business and I had a Jew like that working for me, I'd fire him.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's certain things. I wouldn't fire him for being a Jew. I'd fire him for screaming anti-Semite all the time.
You had that. You know the poster, gay state girl. I mean, she seems pretty reasonable person.
Yeah, she's not a super Jew, and she's not really a Jewish nationalist either. She's actually sane, you know. The Jewiest of the Jews all went to Israel, you know. The problem with Israel is it's too Jewish, you know. Israel's a gigantic Jewish ghetto. Israel's a gigantic Jewish ghetto. The Jews complained that we put them in ghettos. Well, in 1947 and 1948, the Jews created the biggest ghetto in the whole world that's ever been created. It's a Jewish ghetto with 5 million Jews in it. And it's even got walls around it, doesn't it? It's even got walls around it, just like the other ghettos did. And those are ghetto Jews. Those Jews living in Israel are ghetto Jews.
Except they wall themselves in.
That's where the mindset of the ghetto Jew still continues to reign. The Progressive Project has always been the assimilation of the Jews. When those Jews came out of the ghetto, and you see, Napoleon really is the father of the Jews, of the modern Jews, of the Reformed Jews anyway, because Napoleon liberated the Jews. He was the first one to let the Jews out of the ghetto.
Wasn't Cromwell? Cromwell too?
Really, Napoleon did, I think. What did Cromwell do? What did he do?
He welcomed them back to England.
What did he do with the Jews then? Yeah, well, countries were always welcoming them back, weren't they? They're always throwing them out and welcoming them back, weren't they? I mean, that's just always what's going on, you know. You see, countries were dependent on them because Jews were bankers, you know. So they throw them out, but then they need the Jews' money, so they invite them back in. And the whole problem with the Jews was that they'd just always be loaning money to the people in power, and then that would just cause all sorts of problems for the Jews pretty much. But it also ended up aligning them with the ruling elites, you know. Yeah, that was what was going on a lot of times, that Jews are getting thrown out of countries, you know. But really, when the Jews came out of the ghetto in the early 1800s, not many people know this, but they started being released from all the ghettos all over Europe. They were really a damaged people. They're really, really damaged. They're really screwed up. Because they've been in ghettos for 800 years. And see, this is what the Orthodox likes. They like ghetto Jews. And they're stupid. They're stupid. They're superstitious. They're paranoid. They were chintzy. They were dishonest. They were just not okay. They're practically mentally ill from 800 years in the ghetto. They're crazy. And progressive people in Europe looked at these Jews coming out of the ghetto and went, Jesus Christ, these people are all screwed up, man. These people are a mess. We can't just let them into society like this, these screwed up people. We gotta try to assimilate them. So the whole project was trying to assimilate these ghetto Jews
you support. You're an assimilationist.
Take the Jew out of it. Get the Jew out of the ghetto and get the ghetto out of the Jew. That was a progressive project in the 1800s. I'm serious. That was a Marxist project. Assimilation of the Jews. That was Marxist project too. It's always been the project of the left, and recently the left's kind of abandoned it. But really, we really need to go back to that, because the whole problem of Israel is they went back in the ghetto, and they put the ghetto back in the Jew. And they all went back there and lived in a gigantic ghetto, and they're developing that ghetto mindset again. Israel has that ghetto mindset that the Jews developed in 800 years in that ghetto. And just like those Jews get stuck in those ghettos, they're going crazy. And Israeli Jews are crazy. Haven't you noticed that? Haven't you noticed how nutty they are? And the longer they stay in Israel, the more nutty they get, the more ghettoized they get. See? They're not assimilated. They're ghetto Jews. The Orthodox Jews like being in the ghetto. They like the ghetto mindset.
What about Luke Ford? He's a convert. Converted to that sect.
Well, I don't understand that guy. I don't understand why he converted to Orthodoxy. Some Orthodox are okay. I don't really hate him or anything, but, you know, really, there was no Orthodox church, really. the Jews just came out of the ghetto, and there was no split in the Jewish church religion. And then the Reform started splitting off, and the conservatives started splitting off. And the Reform basically was like the ultimate. They were the ultimate assimilated Jews. They were the pro-assimilationists. And they were like, well, you know, we're going to take out of the Jewish religion. We're going to look at the Jewish religion, and we're going to find everything that's cool about the Jewish religion. And we're going to, you know, change that and say that's what we believe in. And then all this
when I interviewed Luke, he says, Luke Ford says the kind of the opposite of that. He says that the Orthodox, they don't really care about, like I told you, Luke Ford basically came out as like a white nationalist, and he said the Orthodox have been pretty, they're not really offended by that stuff that much.
Not offended by what stuff?
By like his writings, and Luke Ford has been writing a lot on his blog in favor of like white nationalism, but he says the Orthodox, they don't really care, it doesn't offend them.
Of course not. They're reactionaries. Yeah, sure. And they lived in ghettos for 800 years, and they were forbidden from marrying out. They forbid their women from marrying a non-Jewish man. If a Jewish woman married, had sex with a non-Jewish man in the ghettos of Spain in the 1500s, the rabbis would cut off her nose.
Really?
Chop it off with a knife.
It sounds like a lot like Islam.
That's how they enforced it. How do you think those Jews got so inbred? They enforced it by these Muslims with a sword, you know? The Muslims say, if you leave Islam, we kill you. And it was mostly enforced on the women. The women just could not have, were forbidden to have sex
there's a site called, I think it's called it's called Gates of Vienna. It's an anti-Islam site, but there was an article saying, like, in Europe, like the Muslims, men, they encourage their men to go out and fuck European women, but then they're very protective, like they have zero tolerance for non-Muslim to mess with their women.
All tribes protect their women. Kevin McDonald is right on this. The basic prerogative of all tribes is protect our women. Our women can only screw our guys. That's our genetic inheritance right there. And then the other prerogative is, you know, the men deal with their women and create new whatever, Sneeds or whatever, the Sneed tribe or whatever. But the Sneed men get to go out and raid all the competing tribes and screw all the women of the competing tribes, basically.
And that's
to mess up their genetic line.
I mean,
put the Sneed genetic line into all the enemies of the Sneed, you see? And that's what tribes have been doing forever. And that's why males are kind of free to roam free, sort of, but the women are not. That's your seed bank, man. They mess that up. That's your genetic legacy.
I think that's basically, I mean, Muslims take that to extreme. That's been the case throughout history. But with white nationalists, white nationalists don't allow for white men to date other women.
Yeah. Yeah, but they do it anyway, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do anyway.
Yeah. You see, the whole crazy thing about these ethnic nationalist movements is they're trying to police male sexuality.
So you basically,
I mean, it's crazy.
Do you agree with that? So as a white guy, do you agree with that notion that you can date anyone, but you don't care? Anyone can basically screw anyone.
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, maybe that's stupid genetically or something, but I just don't care about stuff like that.
I think genetically it's stupid, but I mean, you're not. The thing is, I mean, you don't plan on having kids anyway, so it's like, well, fuck it.
It doesn't really matter because all these races, all these idiotic ethnic nationalists act like all these races have been set in stone for all this time, but races are just changing all the time. And this thing called white people is a fairly new phenomenon, and there are no pure races. There are no pure races, and all races have just been bringing in with everybody else all down through time. And this notion of a race or whatever, it's just these races just come and go all the time, and they merge with each other and they split off from each other. And
speaking about sex and race, I saw you really had that post. You really gave that Royce guy a good verbal lashing.
Yeah, I think they're crazy. I think the game people are crazy. And they're lying. They're lying.
Royce is telling a lie.
The game people are all lying. the game theory is based on the notion that it's a variation on the theme that everyone can be rich. How many times have you heard an American say that? Everyone can be rich.
Yeah, I mean, game is it's a factor to a degree, but it's like these get-rich schemes. Like, everyone can, if they learn this trick, they can get rich, and if you're not rich, you're a total loser. You're a total failure if you're not in the top 10% of economics.
Let me tell you something. When everybody gets rich, nobody's rich.
And you would compare, sex.
Right?
Yeah, so you would compare the game thing to economics.
Look, rich means the top 20% of the population. Rich is relative. Rich means I got more than everybody else. When everybody's rich, nobody's rich. When everybody's a millionaire, $1 million and $1.69 will buy you a surfing at a 7-Eleven.
Totally.
Okay? You know,
so
all this stuff is relative. You're only rich. It just means you got more than everybody else. You know? The alphas, they're only...
We're basically out of time, so... Before I wrap it up, I mean, what specifically did you say to Royce, and what was the response that you got?
Royce didn't respond, but another guy did. Look, this is what I said. I said, you guys are selling this alpha thing. In any society, only maybe 15 to 20% of the men will be alphas, okay? The alphas are the guys that are attractive to most of the women most of the time. Betas are ordinary, average guys. There's nothing wrong with them. There are brothers, our fathers, our sons, our uncles, our cousins, your boss, your neighbor, next door, your best friend. Those are the betas. There's nothing wrong with being average. Omegas are the losers, and they're the guys who are attractive to hardly any of the women most of the time. Okay? So in any society, there will be only 15 to 20% alphas. And in any unhinged and unregulated society, the 15 to 20% of alphas will monopolize a lot of the best women, especially in their 20s.
What do you mean by unregulated?
Unregulated? That's what the game people are saying now. We have an unregulated society because it got rid of mandatory marriage. In societies with mandatory marriage, they throw a monkey wrench into this whole thing, and they kind of don't let the alphas monopolize all the women like that. And basically, every beta gets to get married, and even most of the omegas get married, and they just... This alpha thing doesn't really get started all that much because everybody's just forced to get married. So the natural tendency of humankind, which is female hypergamy and alpha monopolization of females, and harem acquisition and all that, is stopped by the civilizing impulse of mandatory marriage and religion.
So, Robert Lindsay, I'd like to thank you for being on.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
That's all we have for today's show, so take care, and we'll be back with you next time.